The recording that you're about to listen to is a talk from the City Bible Forum. We would appreciate you respecting our copyright by not making copies of this talk or altering the content in any way. We hope that you find the material beneficial. If you would like more information on the City Bible Forum, you can visit us on the web at citybibleforum.org.
Well, these days, if you catch a train, everyone is on their phones. But in the old days, if you caught a train, everyone was on a paper. So I don't know what the difference is. But they say these days, if you go to a party and no one's talking to you, at least you can pull your phone out and pretend someone's talking to you. And at a dance party, it's just water wars of people on their phones. So we don't know how to dance anymore, and we don't know how to talk anymore. So we just end up shouting at each other, or we don't talk at all. So we certainly don't know how to talk about important things. And we don't know how to talk about God. But that's all right, because God talks to us. And one main way that God talks to us is he sends his son, Jesus. Now, if you've been coming along, you know I've been using this photo. I got it off the internet. It's not Jesus, but I reckon if Jesus was around today, that's what he'll look like. I'm actually waiting for the day when someone in the room goes, "Hey, that's my photo." And I get to say, "Hey, it's Jesus. Jesus really did come back." Because he would have looked like this, a short, tanned, nondescript, Middle Eastern male walking around the countryside of Palestine speaking Aramaic. So welcome again to our talks. Each week we've been looking at Jesus meeting a different person in the Bible and asking the question, what would Jesus say to this person and what would Jesus say to me today? And today our question is this, what would Jesus say to the outsider? And in the Bible reading we've had, Jesus has just met a woman and she's a complicated character. Because you can't fit her into a neat category, but that's the point. She's Syrian, but to the Syrians, she's not Syrian enough. She's Lebanese, but to the Lebanese, she's not Lebanese enough. But to the Jews, she's definitely a foreigner. And that means for them, she will never be a people of God. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to Jesus crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is demon-possessed and suffering terribly." And Jesus replied, "It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs." "Yes, it is, Lord," she said. "Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus said to her, "Wow, woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted." Now, this is a part of the Bible I just do not understand. I have three boys, Toby, Cooper, and Jonty, and they are high energy. And so people always ask me, how do you raise three boys? I say, it's easy. You just got pretend they're dogs. You got to feed them, and you give them a ball to play with. And my Asian relatives are horrified. You can't call your boys dogs. That is such an insult. But that's what Jesus has done. He's just called this woman a dog, and she has called herself a dog. What's going on here? Well, to understand, we need to hear the three things that Jesus is saying to this woman and the three things he's saying to us today. Number one, we belong to tribes. Jesus answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel. I'm of the tribe of Israel, and you are not." This is Richard Glover, Australian author, and just last year he came out with his book, The Land Before Avocado. And he looks at Australia of the 1960s and 70s. The Australia of the 1960s and 70s, that's the Australia I grew up in. And Richard Glover says, do you remember in the 1960s and 70s in Australia, you could smoke on a plane and a train? Do you remember in the Australia of the 1960s and 70s, we didn't have seatbelt laws. And so when you came home from the hospital with your newborn baby, this was your baby seat. It was a cardboard box you put the kid in and put the box in the back seat of the car with no seatbelt. And I would add, do you remember, in the Australia of the 1960s and 70s, there were no Chinese people. So my siblings and I, we were the only Chinese in the whole primary school. And that meant if you saw another Chinese person, you'd say, "You're Chinese, I'm Chinese and you'll become best friends. You would cross the road just to meet another Chinese person. Why? Because we're tribal. This is Henri Tajfel, sociologist, psychologist, in his famous social identity theory. And he says as human beings, we naturally cluster into groups, into tribes. And it'll be over the most arbitrary, meaningless things. It'll be over, we have the same birthday. We have the same favourite colour. We're sitting on that side of the room. They're sitting on that side of the room. East side versus west side. And so he starts saying things like, you went to Sydney University? Me too. You like sriracha sauce? Me too. You drive a Jeep? Me too. You become Jeep bros. Why? Because we form tribes, and tribes give us identity, security, status, standing, but most importantly, according to Henri Tajfel, tribes will give us esteem. But what's the problem with tribes? Well, number two, tribes will exclude us. Jesus replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs, meaning we are here, you're there, you are not one of us. Now, I would never get fashion. I don't understand fashion, but that's the point. You're not meant to get fashion. Fashion's like a joke that I just don't get, and that's the point. You're not meant to get it. Fashion says, hey, it's short shorts. And then it says, no, we're long shorts now. And then it says, no, we're back to short shorts. It's like, oh man, I can't keep up. And that's the point. Someone explained, you know what fashion is? Fashion is whatever your dad can't wear. And so these are the Levi 501 originals, right? These were the original jeans, the it jeans, the cool jeans. These were the ones you had to wear until the dad started wearing them and ruined it for everyone. So now they're the dad jeans. And so fashion had to invent the skinny jeans because no dad with a dad bod can pull off this look. And this, for 2019, is the haircut to get. It's the faux hawk fade. Now look at it. Look at what it's doing. It is maximizing the hair at the top of your head where your dad has no hair. And then it's shaving away the bits at the side, the very bit where your dad only had hair. And so your dad is going, oh man, I can't believe they've done this. There's no way I can do this look. And that's the point. Fashion excludes you. And that's what tribes do. Tribes will exclude. And tribes will exclude in two ways. One way is this. We demonize the other side. Have you noticed with the original rugby league teams, they're all named after animals. So you have the Sydney City Roosters. You have the West Tigers. You have the Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs. And part of the reason is you feel tough as an animal. I'm a tiger. But it also means you get to boo the other side. Boo the bulldogs. Boo the doggies. And you forget you're booing a human being, a father with a family. Nah, you're a dog. You're a mongrel. Which is sort of why Super Rugby just does not work. You know, the Western force. What is that? Force. It's nebulous. It's abstract. It's here, but sort of not here. What is that? Even worse, the Waratahs. That's a flower. How can you play as a flower in a contact sport? You can't hate a flower, but you can't cheer a flower either. That's why it just doesn't work, because you're meant to demonize the other side. And so when Jesus calls this woman a dog, that's what tribes do. They demonize, depersonalize, and dehumanize the other side. And so according to Henri Tajfel, in social identity theory, when we form tribes, it's no longer just us versus them. It actually becomes good versus evil. We are the saints, they're the sinners. And so this side of the room will now see that side of the room as evil, and we need to protect ourselves from them. And so the latest Pew research finds out that now we in the West are now more polarized than ever before. It's left versus right, red versus blue, progressives versus conservatives. And this explains the phenomenon of Brexit in the UK, Trump in the USA, and you can see the hatred, the fear in their eyes, where the other side is no longer just wrong, the other side is now evil. And that's what tribes do, they demonize the other. But there's a second thing that tribes do to exclude, and tribes will demand an impossible level of perfection from their own members. So sooner or later, tribes will have a witch hunt and a purge where they exclude their own most loyal members. So I work one day a week as a doctor, and as I explained a few weeks ago, medicine is very hierarchical. So that poster that they have where they say, not just a GP, the reason why they say that is because, buddy, you are just a GP. I cracked that joke at my own Chinese church on the weekend. No one laughed. Too many Chinese GPs in the audience. And they go, no, we're not just a GP. No, buddy, you are just a GP. And in the medical hierarchy, there's only one person below the GP, and that is me, the surgical assistant. Medicine is very hierarchical. And so medicine will say things like this. You need to study hard in high school, get the marks to get into med school, and then you get into med school, and then you'll say, oh, you know what? It needs to be Sydney University and not New South. And then you'll say, you know what? You need to be a specialist and not just a GP. And then it'll say, you know what? You should be a surgeon and not just a specialist. And then it'll say, you know what? It should be orthopedic surgery and not just surgery. And then it'll say, you know what? It needs to be knee surgery and not just hand surgery. And you know what? It should be a major teaching referral hospital in Sydney and not just a regional hospital. And then I say, you know what? It should be the Mayo Clinic, USA, and not Sydney, Australia. And you think, oh man, I can never be good enough to belong to the tribe of doctors. I belong to the tribe of Chinese, but I will never be Chinese enough for the Chinese. I belong to the tribe of Aussies, but I will never be Aussie enough for the Aussies. I have a friend who played rep AFL, representative football, and he said at the end of every game, people would say to him, good game, good game, good game. But then he said to me, but I never once heard my dad say, good game. I was never good enough for my dad. And just last year, I met up with a friend. She's a mother. She has raised three children to become adults. She supported her husband. She herself had a successful career. But then she says to me, but I was never good enough for my mother-in-law. We can never be good enough for our own tribes. This is John Ronson, TED speaker, author. His recent book is John Ronson, So You've Been Publicly Shamed. And he says every tribe has its own system of justice, and it will find a way to shut out, shun, and shame its own members. And especially now, in today's call-out culture, all of us are only one poorly worded tweet or email away from being found out, purged, and kicked off the island and publicly shamed. So that's the problem with tribes. Well, what's the solution? Number three, we can be united in Jesus. Jesus replied, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Yes, it is, Lord, she said. Even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table. Then Jesus said to her, woman, well played. You have great faith. Well, what's going on here? Well, which one of these do not belong? We have a grown-up, child, grown-up. Now, we want to say the child doesn't belong because the other three are grown-ups. But you know that in most countries of the world, they'll say, well, that's mum, that's dad, so that's their kid, so they belong together. This bozo, we don't know who he is, so he doesn't belong. Or we could say, okay, we have a hammer, an axe, a piece of wood, and a saw. Which one of these doesn't belong? And we want to say, you know, the wood, because the other three are tools. But we know that in many countries of the world, they'll say, well, the axe chops the wood, The saw saws the wood, so they belong together. Ah, oh, the poor hammer, it goes with nails and it's all left alone by itself. Well, what's going on here? Well, here we're not grouping things according to their properties. We're grouping things according to their relationships. So which one of these don't belong? We have a child, we have a table with bread, and we have a dog. Well, they all belong together if they belong in the same house. And that's what the woman is saying. Because Jesus answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel, and she calls Jesus bluff. Because she says, nah, Jesus, you were sent not just to Israel, but to the lost. Because elsewhere Jesus does say that. The Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. And this woman's saying, you know what? I'm just as lost as any Israelite. And I need Jesus just as much as any Israelite. We have a shared, common humanity. And Jonathan Haidt would agree. Jonathan Haidt is a liberal, secular, atheist, Jewish psychologist who's a professor in the USA. Last year, he put out this New York Times bestseller called The Coddling of the American Mind. And he says the problem, the reason why we're so polarized right now is we're seeing the whole world as us versus them, good versus evil. And the line between good and evil is between us and them. And Jonathan Haidt says we need to flip that around. There is no us and them. Them is us. And we are just as broken as everyone else. And he approvingly quotes of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who, as you know, has his famous line, the line dividing good and evil cuts through the heart of every human being. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn, as you know, was in a Russian-Soviet gulag where people starved to death, were worked to death, and were beaten to death. And so it became us versus them. Prisoners versus the prison guards, good versus evil. And suddenly Alexander Solzhenitsyn has this moment, goes, no. It's not us versus them. Them is us. And we're all just as broken as each other. The line between good and evil isn't between us and them. The line between good and evil is in my own heart. We're just as lost as each other. And we need Jesus just as much as each other. We have a shared common humanity. So what would Jesus say to the outsider? Today we've heard three things. Number one, as humans we form tribes. But number two, tribes will exclude. But number three, we can find unity in Jesus. We can find a shared common humanity. Now we have the movie The Sixth Sense, we have the movie The Fight Club, and we have the TV show Mr. Robot. Now, no spoilers, I won't ruin it, but many of you know that what these have in common is there's this moment towards the end where there's reveal moment where you go, whoa, I have been viewing reality all wrong. It's the other way around. What is up is down. What is real is imaginary. And what is alive is dead. And now this new way of viewing reality makes much more sense of what's going on. Well, you and I have two ways of viewing reality. The first way is this, and it's the old way, and it's the way we've been taught. It's us versus them, good versus evil. I'm the saint, they are the sinner, I'm okay, they're broken, I'm perfect, they're the problem. And God is obligated to love me just the way I am. But the problem with this is this leads to self-righteousness, self-entitlement, and judgmentalism. This is what leads to fights, factions, divisions, and polarizations. But there's a new second way, different way of looking at reality. And it's what this woman and Jesus teach us today. And it's this. You know what? It's not us versus them. Them is us. And you know what? I'm not okay. I'm broken. I'm not a saint. I'm a sinner. And I am part of the problem. But that's okay, because Jesus didn't come looking for perfect people. Jesus came looking for humble people. And so if we can humble ourselves enough to say we have a shared common humanity, we're just as lost as everyone else, we need Jesus just as much as everyone else, we can find belonging and unity in the household of Jesus.
Okay, we've got some great questions here, so we'll get Sam up. And here we go. Why would Jesus stoop to demonising, initially at least, someone from another tribe?
Yeah, I think if you start reading between the lines, there's a playfulness in their conversation. There's a banter, there's a to and from, there's a bit of a nudge, nudge, wink, wink going on. And that's why the woman keeps coming back, because she can recognise they're actually having a playful conversation. Because elsewhere, Jesus would never do that. So, you know, Jesus meets many other foreign people, marginalised outsiders, like the Samaritan woman at the well, the Roman centurion, the lepers, and he never demonises or dehumanises them. So I think what Jesus is doing here is a public lesson, a chance to publicly restore this woman and shows that she too like is a child of Israel, that sort of thing. So it's a chance for a public lesson.
Okay, I had a few more questions along that theme, to push a little bit more. Did the Jews at the time refer to Gentiles as dogs, which is why Jesus uses that label at first? Is it a kind of a test for her? And a related question is, did the Canaanite woman have a supernatural insight that she communicated to sort of help Jesus understand his role?
Wow, that's a double question. You're not allowed to ask that in court, are you? As I explained last time, as doctors, we just answer in double negatives. That's not unlikely.
Oh, okay.
That's not improbable.
Yeah. I think lawyers do that too.
Yeah. All right, well, the first one, yes, it would have been an incredible insult. So it's funny, as a parent, I call my kids animals, right? I call them dogs, monkeys, pigs. And my Asian relatives are horrified, but meaning, like, it's okay in Australia, but in traditional cultures, you can't. But every now and then, my kids think it's okay, so they'll call someone else a monkey. And I thought, no, you cannot do that. That is so loaded. So you can imagine now, in traditional cultures, that would have been 1,000 times worse to call someone a dog. I even just read last night in a commentary that to even call someone a Gentile was an insult. It was like the equivalent of the N-word back then in the Middle East. So Jesus is actually playing with a political hand grenade here. And I really, really think there's a playfulness going on, a nudge, nudge, wink, wink, in a way that insiders are allowed to use words that outsiders cannot. So it's almost like a rhetorical game saying to the woman, you know, you and I are actually the same because we're using language in a way that outsiders can't do with each other. But again, to show that this was a chance for a publicly acted out lesson or parable. Or because I explained elsewhere that, you know, you have that famous miracle where you have the woman who's been bleeding for 12 years, and in that culture that made her not just diseased but dirty and maybe even immoral and shamed and dishonoured and shut out. So she sneaks in through the crowd and just touches Jesus on the cloak. And it says Jesus stopped and said, "Who touched me?" And all the disciples are going, "Oh, Jesus, the whole crowd is touching you right now. What do you mean, who touched you?" And then this gives Jesus a chance to say, no, someone touched me because I felt healing power come out of me. Someone just got healed." And then he just stands there and waits. And it's almost like that teacher says, "Well, we're not going home until someone owns up." So finally, and the Bible says the woman, realizing she couldn't get away with it anymore, had to come forward, and in front of everyone, she had to explain how she had got healed. And then Jesus, in front of everyone, says, "Woman, you know, your faith has healed you. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace." Shalom, which is the ultimate nirvana for the Hebrews, like shalom. And so Jesus has found a way to publicly restore this woman, give her face and honor, and let everyone know she's healed. She's no longer unclean. And I think what Jesus is doing here with this woman, he could have just healed the woman's child as she asked, but instead they play this game out, so there's a public demonstration of God's love and the inclusiveness of the outsider for even Jesus' disciples, because initially Jesus' disciples didn't want her around.
Okay, so a question sort of looking for a positive sort of response from us. if we are children or if we are dogs, how do we learn to eat at the same table?
Yeah, so what it is Henri Tajfel in social identity theory says we don't just form tribes, but we do two things. One, we form tribes, and that makes us feel really self-righteous about ourselves. But two, we think the worst of the other tribe. And we assume that they're evil right from the start. So what Jesus is asking us to do is to flip around. To be a member of his tribe, we have to humble ourselves. So that's step one, humble ourselves. But then think best of the other tribe. And elsewhere in the Bible, it talks about how God sends rain on everyone, meaning God blesses everyone no matter what. So always in every tribe, no matter what, there'll be some of God's goodness, some of God's truth, some of God's beauty, and some of God's wisdom. So whenever we encounter another tribe, our first move shouldn't be feel threatened, shouldn't be think worst of them, and to take the offense personally, but just to depersonalize it and think, okay, they mean well, and I would think best of this other person. So there's a book called Raising Cain, Developing the Emotional Intelligence of Boys, and it talks about the problem with boys, men as well, and I guess humans in general, but particularly boys and men, is they've only been taught fight or flight, anger or withdraw. So you can't ever have a proper conversation with a man without it either turning into a fight or they hide in their room because they don't know how to navigate the shades of grey in between. But it says we need to teach emotional intelligence to boys. So their first reaction is don't take it personally. Don't see them as a threat. They mean well. Think best of the other person. So it's what happens when we get cut off in traffic by another car. Our first reaction is, because we take it personally, they didn't mean well, they're an idiot, they're a threat, they're evil, they're immoral.
But Sam, you actually ride a motorbike, so you've got to expect that.
That's right, got to expect that. But really, you know what, they probably meant well, they didn't see me, don't take it personally. So that's our first thing. So and I think that's how we navigate the world as tribes of Jesus. Be humble, we're not there because we were better than anyone else. In fact, we're just as lost as everyone else. And think best of the other tribe.
The recording that you have just listened to is from the City Bible Forum. For more information about City Bible Forum events in your city, or to order other talks, please visit citybibleforum.org.